That is a non-controversial way to throw some ice into a conversation.
And on that note...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition summer episode of Wonkcast, the student-run podcast brought to you by the Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration, here produced at GW University. For the episode today, I have with me Eli Richmond.
Hello.
We have Kat Lundy.
Hello.
And you have me, Eric Ledoux. We have been having a great summer and having a wonderful time observing all the changes and trials and tribulations that have been going on in American policy and administration during this summertime.
Yes, they've all been wonderful.
But we wanted to focus on today, we were just having a wonderful conversation about the Abolish ICE movement and really leaning into that and asking, what does it mean to abolish ICE? What is the origin of ICE? What does ICE actually do? What is its purpose, and what is its practical application?
Before we, get into the history of the movement itself, can we maybe talk a bit about, the different parts of ICE? I mean, Kat was just telling us about, these different...
So there are sub-agencies within ICE. One of them is what you would think of when you see reports on the news, ICE with a gun, a bulletproof vest, and ICE written on the back of a shirt. And then there's also another subsegment of USCIS and ICE that does basically a lot of, paperwork on people that are applying using fake passports or have entered the country illegally. More desk jockeys than actual guys with guns. And one of the issues that some people are running into when they're talking about the Abolish ICE movement is, are you abolishing the total enforcement of immigration law or just this one part that tends to be a little bit more violent and what you see in the news a little bit more? I know from having a lot of friends in the immigration reform movement, one of the things that they're talking about is that with immigration policy specifically, people like carving out populations or carving out specific policies that are really, really narrow. Where with my organization, we don't like focusing on just abolish ICE. It should be that people are galvanizing around comprehensive immigration reform. So while ICE, for me, is not a good organization, its only job is to go take people out of this country. I would say it's a lot of different things need to happen in immigration reform and not just ICE, or not just abolishing ICE.
From what I've gotten to learn about ICE, I would say that some of its functions seem very useful on paper. There's looking into, there's preventing human trafficking, there's cracking down on drugs entering across the border and other goods entering the country illegally. With that said, there's a part of me that's confused as to why these functions don't apply to the FBI or some other agency that maybe has a better track record of professionalism. What is it about ICE that makes it that only this separate agency needs to do this function?
Yeah, Eric, and I think that's something that's always occurred to me whenever I hear the rhetoric coming back against this Abolish ICE movement. When people ask, well, who's going to take care of human trafficking? Who's going to shut down these drug rings? It's like, we have other law enforcement agencies to do those things, and I think that's partially what's being envisioned by the policy entrepreneurs that are pushing this Abolish ICE movement. So maybe let's back up and talk a little about this. I know one of the main movers of this movement has been a guy named Sean McElwain, I think is how you say his name. And he kind of initially started this as an Overton window mover. So the Overton window is a logical idea of, it's the range of acceptable policy ideas in political discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people talk about moving the Overton window, they're usually talking about introducing very extreme ideas in order to make other ideas that were previously not acceptable seem acceptable. So perhaps in American politics, outright banning handguns for civilians is not in the Overton window. It is not acceptable for a politician to go out and propose that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get elected if they do that.
Okay.
But if a big movement grew up that was talking about just abolishing guns altogether, that can be looked at as an Overton window mover. They're trying to increase the range of acceptable ideas, and then when a politician comes in and introduces banning just handguns, suddenly that idea doesn't seem too crazy anymore because the Overton window moved.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah. So I believe Sean McAlway was originally looking at this as in a way of getting comprehensive immigration reform kind of getting it going again, because it had stalled, and McAlway had looked at the ways that conservative movements had used campaigns about abolishing certain sectors or agencies of government, and seen how effective those were, even though none of those agencies had been dissolved. So his view was, we can get this movement going and then start talking about a bigger range of acceptable immigration opportunities. But then it changed. Sean McAlway seems to be a true believer now. And we have politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez winning campaigns on the backs of abolish ICE movements. So how do we look at that? Is it just a way to increase the range of acceptable immigration proposals? Or could we really abolish ICE and move those necessary responsibilities to other agencies?
Well, maybe the ends will explain the rhetoric when we get around there. I have a suspicion that the function that ICE is on paper supposed to be doing is never going to go away. The idea of keeping an eye on human trafficking and cracking down on any kind of illicit activities that involve crossing the border. But the way that those functions are executed will probably be changed, or at least the accountability for them will be changed. There's been a larger discussion about how ICE, and to clarify here, a lot of people are saying abolish ICE, but also many of the grievances that people have about how we administer immigration policy has a lot to also do with the border police.
Mm-hmm.
Is it called border police? It's border police.
Customs and Border Patrol.
Specifically, border patrol has been one of the main drivers of a lot of the grievances that people are voicing right now with immigration policy and administration.
And I think that's a really important point to bring up, Eric, because we don't hear people saying abolish CBP. People seem to have accepted that we need some kind of border security. They're saying abolish ICE. People are in charge of getting people out of the country.
Well, I mean,
not stopping them from getting in the first place.
I guess it's just that border patrol also kicks people out of the country as well. It's just they have a very limited range of, I believe it's within 100 miles of the border is where they operate. Mm-hmm. And then if you're any farther in, anything that involves deporting someone who isn't from this country or didn't enter legally, that is when ICE gets involved, because mm-hmm. ICE has jurisdiction over the rest of the United States, 100 miles into the border.
Okay.
So maybe it has more to do with, it could be the more that there's this value system that people are placing where really it's like, okay, stopping people at the border or like having control, exercising control over the border, or at least being knowledgeable of what's entering the border, people seem to be in favor of, or at least I'm assuming this, because no one's saying abolish Customs and Border Patrol, but that the issue is that people don't, that the value system here is that people do not like the idea of someone who's entered the country, has established themselves in the country, and is a part of a community, should not be just kicked out and ripped out of it.
Right.
Because really this is about, at least the way I'm hearing it is that, like, regardless of whatever your immigration status is in this country, it seems that, you know, if you're a part of a community at some point, there seems to be this gray zone of, after you've been here a bit, you should belong here, or there should be a pathway for you to continue staying here.
I also want to add that one of the things that's really hurting the immigration reform movement is people using things like immigrants aren't criminals, like that criminalizing aspect of even putting that word into positive messaging. Sorry, I did air quotes, but that's not positive messaging. And one of the things I like people to know is that crossing the border illegally is a misdemeanor. It is not a felony. So it's the same as like me serving a drink to a guy who's like 18 at a bar, or think of any other misdemeanors that like, you're not going to call this person a criminal for like this small offense. I think peeing in public is a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. So one of the things that I really don't like in people that are arguing against abolish ICE is that they're saying they're getting rid of criminals. That's not really a criminal offense.
Oh yeah, it seems like a way overblown reaction.
Yes.
For a misdemeanor.
Yes.
It's the people that want to crack down immigration and who use rhetoric like, oh, our current system is catch and release. It's often them commenting on the fact that, you know, you can't jail someone indefinitely for doing a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why our current system is, you know, if someone has entered the country in an undocumented fashion and turns themselves in or is caught, you know, you get their paperwork or you write them up and then you give them a court date to show up to address the misdemeanor. And then you let them go because, I mean, can you imagine being held in jail for peeing in public? Crossing the border indefinitely.
Indefinitely.
Yeah. So it's...
And yet ICE is pressuring all these all these local law enforcement to do just that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, if someone is cited for not being registered properly, to hold them in prison. And more law enforcement agencies in the country are doing that. They're playing nice with ICE and just holding on to those immigrants.
You see that more often with there's one this past year in Tennessee, and there was also one in Ohio. These very large on-site work raids. Usually these are investigations that start through the IRS about taxes or someone taking out a lot of cash, raises eyebrows. And then you see these raids, like in Tennessee recently, where it was a meat processing factory where this owner of this factory had just horrible conditions. Like, workers had to jump across those giant hooks with the dead cows floating on them. Like, they had to jump over that contraption to get to their little spaces at work. But either way, this owner got no charges put against him, but there were over 100 people, some of them with legal H-2B visa status, that were all arrested and then put into jail. And local Tennessee law enforcement worked with ICE to make that possible. They blocked off roads. They did all this other stuff that ICE technically doesn't have the authority to do, or won't be able to do without cooperation of local law enforcement. And it also happened recently in Ohio, and I think also a meat processing plant. It might have been a farm. But these sanctuary laws that people put into place, like a person who is a victim of sexual assault or of murder is less likely to go to the police to report a crime if they think that ICE is going to, or if they think that the police department is going to cooperate with ICE to deport them or their mother or a family member. So I think that sanctuary laws keep communities safer, and I don't understand why people get so upset at police not wanting to cooperate with ICE.
I think it's because they don't understand what a sanctuary city is. I mean, when people hear sanctuary city, they still think of the policies in like San Francisco had in like the 1970s. It's been like, we're not going to enforce federal immigration law in this city. Sorry, like, we think immigrants are good. That's what sanctuary cities used to mean, and so people still think about them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the debate has just become totally, it doesn't mean anything anymore, because the two sides are arguing about different things.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad misinformation that goes around with immigration, because it is very emotional for some people to talk about.
It feels like, regardless of what your opinion is about immigration, both sides feel like the current system is not functioning appropriately. I'm curious if that might actually, if that is true, necessarily. Like, if we were following, and I see Kat already nodding, yes. Just saying, well, maybe what actually the current system is, which is, you know, it's a misdemeanor to cross into the United States, and then once you're here, you know, you have a court date, and then you're allowed to just go and work or whatever. That is that system necessarily broken? I'd love to hear more about what people have to say. Is it because there's current gray zones right now, where depending on who is the executive, who is controlling the presidency, basically dictates what immigration policy is? Is it, what is directly, what makes this system a broken system, from either argument?
So, the way I've always heard the debate framed is that the reason we have an immigration crisis is because the capabilities of our deportation system are far less than the amount of undocumented immigrants we currently have. There's something like 11 million undocumented immigrants in the country right now.
Yep.
ICE has the physical capability, not like the, not how many they're legally allowed to deport, like the funding and manpower to deport around 400,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to take like a very hard line, like all illegal immigration is bad, all undocumented immigrants must be kicked out of the country, you're still talking about two decades of deporting people. And that doesn't include, you know, having to figure out who's undocumented. And that's when we get into, like, you know, going into these communities and having to ask for people's papers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, there are other ways around that. You don't have to kick everybody out of the country. You can... And this is what the Obama administration is trying to do. They are saying, we only have the capability to deport 400,000 a year. Let's make sure those 400,000 people are criminals and people who are contributing to their communities. We're going to try to keep them in their communities and hopefully give them a legal pathway to stay here permanently. So why isn't the current system working properly? Maybe it would work okay if we had no undocumented immigrants right now, and the only people ICE were accountable for were new immigrants coming into the country. But when you're talking about a population of immigrants that have been here for many years, that have established lives here, that work in our economy, that have families here, that in many cases have American relatives,
mm-hmm.
Those policies that might seem like common sense to some people who are hostile to immigration, suddenly start coming across in a much more inhumane fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, so this is one thing that I think is a little, two big buckets that I think are wrong with immigration, the immigration system right now, is you have mentalities and you have this narrative that is all across the spectrum, whether it's good or bad. I think everyone in general can agree, like, healthcare is good for, like, America. Whether or not it's a public good is a whole other thing, but I think most people agree, like, healthcare is good. Narrative for immigration is there are some people that say immigration is bad, some people think that immigration is good for the country. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of policy, immigration is very unique in that it is a one field of policy that intersects with so many others. It intersects with education, it intersects with healthcare, it intersects with the labor force in the country. I think that for immigration reform, you have to get coalitions of immigrant rights advocates as well as workers' justice advocates, mm-hmm. healthcare justice advocates, children's welfare, and basically every education, basically any other part, all have to come together and agree on certain things. But there are a lot of people that still disagree on a lot of different things. Like one of the biggest, you know, workers' justice and immigrant rights, they don't necessarily get along very well and agree on a lot of things. So when it comes to, I guess they're proposing now the new H-2C visa, which is essentially just like the H-2B, which they also raised the cap for recently in a proposal. No one can agree on any of the things for people to even come into the country, quote, the right way. So how are we going to agree on when to deport them when they came in the wrong way? I think literally the entire system of legal, illegal enforcement, implementation is all created so incrementally and piecemeal that now none of it actually works with the other parts, like, coherently.
I mean, and there's also the discussion of with the way that this piecemeal fabric of immigration policy, how it interacts together, mm-hmm. and depending on, who's running the administration that executes these policies, it has a huge effect on the basic human rights of the people that this affects. And it feels like, whether or not this system treats you with dignity varies greatly depending on the way you enter this country and depending on, which local extension of immigration, of an immigration related agency is interacting with you.
Add to, the how they enforce and, whether or not it's being enforced evenly, remember those raids I was just talking about? All those people were arrested. There were no charges brought against the owner and the boss of that meat facility when it all started as an IRS investigation into his company. So let's, go ahead and arrest all these workers. It is also illegal to knowingly hire and employ people that are undocumented, but he did not suffer any repercussions from this raid whatsoever, even though he is also guilty of a crime.
Mm-hmm. And many economists have looked into what the effect of immigration has on a country, and I know that there's a general theme and the general trend has been that as labor has more access to free movement between countries into different areas, it makes nations wealthier.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that some libertarian economists have argued that we just shouldn't have immigration policy, and if people want to come in and work in the country, they should just be free to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That way, you don't have this distinction of are you here illegally or not? It's just you're here, you're working, and you're contributing to the economy overall.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very difficult to have the conversation when you have economists saying, immigration in all forms is a net good for the country, and then we have conservatives saying immigration in all forms is a net bad for the country.
The other thing I'll add to that is that there are some people within the new movement of narrative shame around immigration is that sometimes we don't really like it when you only treat immigrants as economic maximizers, mm-hmm. as opposed to humans with families and friends and can contribute far beyond just, tax dollars. It's hard.
It's a great point. I think economists and liberals like to press this point because there's an impression that immigrants are a drain on our economy, and it's wrong, according to economists. Immigrants boost our economy. And so if you just turning around that simple misunderstanding might change some minds. I don't think they actually would, because I don't think people's opposition to immigration has anything to do with economics.
Yeah.
But that's but to the extent that it is dependent on economics, I think people are very interested in changing that misconception.
I remember having a conversation with some friends a while ago about how it feels like what'll happen is one person on one side of an argument will come up with a label that they'll use to talk about to frame the issue in a way that favors what they want, and then you have to do your counterframe. So for a while there was basically as a counter to the frame of calling people illegal immigrants or illegal aliens, was instead to say, no, these aren't illegal aliens, these are undocumented workers. And the point of putting that on there is that undocumented is fairly benign.
Yeah, it's neutral.
And then to say workers was to, like you were saying, Kat, frame people for their economic value.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, yes, that's a helpful thing when in the discussion of talking about economics, but also it is also important to maintain the frame of from a human rights perspective here, if grandma in Mexico wants to come and live with your family in Kentucky, like, why shouldn't she be allowed to come here? Like, there is still value for this family for that person to be there. Yeah. And if she can come up, just let her.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to, let's see if we can bring this conversation back to you about abolishing ICE. And let's think if we can engage in a little policy imagination. So I think it's going to be very hard to get a comprehensive immigration bill passed through Congress because Congress is so dysfunctional. So
that was awful, and Ryan's compromise bill was also awful.
Yeah, I mean, the closest we came was in that 2013 Senate bill that passed, but the politics around immigration have changed so much since then, I have a hard time imagining that kind of bill getting through again. So assuming that we're not going to see a comprehensive legislative fix, that means we're just going to be muddling through from the executive branch. However, we have all this liberal attention now about abolishing ICE. So imagine this. Kirsten Gillibrand gets elected in 2020. She has recently come out as a supporter of the Abolish ICE movement. There's still a Republican Congress, so she can't get a comprehensive immigration bill through. However, she has made a campaign promise to abolish ICE, so she, as an executive order, has told all ICE agents to stand down. Like, they are just not allowed to act to do their jobs, period. How does our immigration policy work, then, given our current immigration laws lacking that centralized deportation force?
I will say that ICE is not like the Department of Education and has not even been around for a very long time. We were able to survive and do immigration enforcement without ICE. We can do it again.
Yeah, ICE didn't really exist until after 9/11 when the Department of Homeland Security was created, and some of the immigration enforcement functions that were a part of basically what was United States Immigration and Citizenship Services, that law enforcement section was just removed and then made into its own agency.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what would happen if we just told ICE to stand down is someone else would just fill the gaps. It would just be a different organizational culture performing the services.
So I guess my question is, can that happen? So, I mean, it's a really important point. ICE didn't exist before 9/11. All of these responsibilities that were previously ensconced in different federal agencies were then integrated under ICE. But the fact is the law has changed, and now those responsibilities are legally belong to ICE.
Mm-hmm.
So without any change in immigration law, but just like the removal of the ICE factor, can we depend on other law enforcement to take those roles?
If the resources were rewired over there, yeah, I would suspect.
It's possible to bypass Congress to abolish ICE through regulation policy, which the executive authority or executive branch can totally do. Obama did it a lot. The Trump administration is also using regulation changes to completely bypass Congress on certain issues. So if someone wanted to go ahead and start drafting changes to certain regulations, to say, create a directive of this agency, please, you know, stand down or inaction on these cases. Please, what is the word? Deferred action against this population. I don't like carving out certain populations again because the whole system is bad. But if you wanted to start creating regulations that really do focus ICE attention only on extreme violent criminals, people who have committed extremely violent crimes, then you could do that through CFR rule changes.
Yeah, DACA 2.0.
Yeah, exactly, DACA 2.0.
All right. Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I think we should probably wrap up, but thanks, guys, for getting together and sharing your thoughts about the Abolish ICE movement. So this has been kind of our special summer WonkCast episode, but we'll be back regularly producing episodes in, late August, early September?
Something like that.
This is a real professional operation you got going on, as you can tell.
So everyone, enjoy your hot summer, and regardless of whatever your opinion is on ice, you can always add some ice to your glass of water or lemonade. Enjoy the summer.
Why would you swallow?
Thanks for coming to GW Wonkcast, brought to you by the Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration. For more wonkiness, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is @GWWonkcast. Send us love letters and hate mail. Email us at wonkcast@gmail.com. And be sure to rate us and subscribe. We're now on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and iTunes. Today's show was produced by Maggie Gallagher. Our editors are Eric Ledoux and Eli Richmond, with music by Pele Gunther.